American Airlines is being sued after a passenger had a medical emergency on a flight in April from Hawaii to Dallas. The automatic external defibrillator on board didn't work, the plane did not make an emergency landing, and the passenger died of a pulmonary embolism 3 days later. Meanwhile, earlier this month, a woman traveling to Cleveland had an allergic reaction on board and stopped breathing during the flight, and a doctor on board treated her with EpiPen injections and an inhaler. That plane did make an emergency landing, and the woman survived. Joining us now to talk about in-flight medical emergencies is Dr. Jose Victor Nabel, assistant professor in the Department of Emergency Medicine at MedStar Georgetown University Hospital. Doctor, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Jeremy.
And how often are there medical emergencies on airplanes?
Unfortunately, there isn't very much hard data on this because there's no centralized reporting system to which all airlines need to report these issues to. Pretty much every airline in the United States has to contract with a ground-based consultation service, and that's because there isn't necessarily going to be a healthcare provider aboard every single flight. And in 2013, a group of researchers published a study in the New England Journal in which they queried the database of one of these ground-based consultation services that provides its service to approximately 10% of global airline traffic. And over about a 2.5-year period, there were about 12,000 in-flight medical events.
And what are those medical events? Do we have any idea of what kinds of things cause a medical emergency on an airplane?
We do, and it varies. People experience medical issues pretty much as frequently as they do on the ground. In that study in the New England Journal, on those 12,000 events, the significant chunk of those were related to passengers who were passing out or nearly passing out. That was the most common. The second most common were breathing issues. And then the third most common were GI or gastrointestinal-related issues such as nausea and vomiting.
And are any of those cases or are a significant amount of those cases related to the fact that the person is flying?
The fact that you are flying at altitude does potentially place patients at increased risk for in-flight medical events. And that's because although airlines pressurize their cabins, they're not necessarily pressurized to sea level. And for a variety of reasons, they're actually pressurized to 6,000 to 8,000 feet. So you're basically in a flying tube, breathing an air that's equivalent to an altitude of 8,000 feet. It's also fairly dry. And so as a result of that high altitude that passengers are experiencing, passengers who have underlying issues such as respiratory issues, cardiovascular issues, are at an increased risk for developing an in-flight medical event.
So I fly a fair bit, and I've been on a number of flights when they said over the loudspeaker, you know, is there a doctor on board? And there's almost always a doctor on board, at least in my experience. But how much training do flight attendants have for dealing with medical problems on board?
So interestingly, in the 1930s, as the airline industry was starting to take off, pretty much every single flight attendant in the United States was a nurse. And that was primarily for one major reason. And it was because in the 1930s, aircraft were crashing all the time. It was a very new industry. We were not very experienced. And as a result, they needed to have people aboard their aircraft that could calm an understandably anxious flying public. And so as a result, they placed nurses aboard all their airlines. Now, World War II happens, and this requirement that all flight attendants be nurses was dropped so that they could be diverted towards the war effort. Flight attendants today do receive some amount of medical training. Specifically in the United States, all flight attendants are trained to do CPR. And they're also, probably more importantly, trained to recognize serious medical issues and solicit help either from the cabin, from other passengers who are flying, or to contact medical professionals on the ground to say, hey, we've got this guy having chest pain. What do you think we should do?
What about the issue of medical equipment? I was surprised to see that on that flight, that American Airlines flight from Hawaii to Dallas, that the defibrillator on board didn't work. Is it common for the medical equipment on board to not work?
So The medical equipment that has to be on board at least U.S.-based airlines is set by the FAA. The FAA was mandated in 1998, the Aviation Medical Assistance Act, and that required the FAA to basically update the set of equipment that was aboard aircraft. This was around the time that automated external defibrillators were actually becoming more commonplace and cheaper. So basically, if somebody was having a cardiac arrest or their heart stopped aboard an aircraft prior to this, it was not necessarily going to be common that these AEDs or automated external defibrillators would be aboard. But in 1998, this list was updated to require this. Now, it's hard to say specifically in terms of how often these types of equipment fail, but I would say that these aircraft are not meant to be flying clinics. They're not meant to necessarily respond to every single type of medical emergency. There's very limited amount of medications and types of equipment aboard U.S.-based airlines. For example, the FAA doesn't require obstetrical supplies aboard U.S.-based airlines. And so if someone were to have an obstetrical emergency or someone were to go into active labor, there wouldn't necessarily be an obstetrical kit to help with that situation. The point of the in-flight medical kit is really to help stabilize someone such that that person can get to more definitive care in the event that aircraft needs to make an expedited landing.
Well, and let's talk about that too, the idea of an emergency landing. And in the case of the flight from Hawaii to Dallas, they didn't make an emergency landing. In the case of the flight to Cleveland, they did, and the patient survived. Who gets to make that decision? Is that just the pilot, or do they consult with doctors on the ground?
Great question. So ultimately, that is the captain's decision. It's a very complicated decision to land an airplane in an expedited fashion or to divert that aircraft, meaning having to land in an airport other than its intended destination. Now, they can take into account several factors. Since all U.S.-based airlines contract with ground-based consultation services, they can basically contact somebody on the ground, their in-house physician, who can help make that decision for them. And it's complex for a number of reasons. For example, the closest airport might not necessarily be an appropriate airport for them to land at. It's also extremely expensive to divert aircraft from its intended destination. And then also, the patient's condition might not necessarily benefit from an expedited landing if the situation is able to be handled aboard without having to land the aircraft earlier. Then the captain might decide to keep on going.
Now, you mentioned 1998 when Congress passed the Aviation Medical Assistance Act. That actually protects doctors who come forward to help during a medical emergency on board from being liable.
In the United States, there's no requirement that healthcare providers respond. That's not necessarily true all over the world. For example, if you're a licensed healthcare provider traveling in the European Union, you do have a mandated responsibility to respond to these events. In the United States, that's not necessarily the case. In fact, there is no legal requirement that you do so. I would probably argue you probably do have an ethical or moral obligation to act. But this 1998 Aviation Medical Assistance Act was meant to encourage healthcare providers to respond by providing them with liability protection, as long as they're acting in good faith without gross negligence.
So for our listeners who fly often or fly occasionally, what should they know? Should they not get on a flight? Should they cancel their flight if they're not feeling well? Or if you're on a flight and you're not feeling well, when is it time to press the call button and get somebody over to help?
So first off, our skies, for the most part, are extremely safe, both from a safety standpoint and from a medical standpoint. Even though there might not necessarily be a healthcare provider aboard your flight, every airline in the United States is able to pull up a healthcare provider at the push of a button through these ground-based consultation services. So I wouldn't necessarily be hesitant to fly just because there's a medical emergency that's reported in the news. I would, however, caution that if you do have underlying health issues, particularly if you have respiratory issues or cardiovascular issues, it's probably a good idea to touch base with your primary care health provider to determine if there are any sort of strategies that can help mitigate any sort of in-flight medical events. For example, passengers or patients who need supplemental oxygen while they're on the ground may need to increase that oxygen while they're in flight.
That's Dr. Jose Victor Nabel, who is assistant professor in the Department of Emergency Medicine at MedStar Georgetown University Hospital. Dr. Nabel, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Jeremy.